WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says last night's attack on Iranian nuclear sites was meant to send a message to Iran and beyond.
When this president speaks, the world should listen.
The assault included B-2 bombers and so-called bunker buster bombs they dropped. Joint Chiefs Chair Dan Kane.
In total, U.S. forces employed approximately 75 precision-guided weapons during this operation. This included 14 30,000-pound GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrators, marking the first ever operational use of this weapon.
Now, the president and Secretary Hegseth say the sites were obliterated. Kane says they're still assessing the damage.
Final battle damage will take some time, but initial battle damage assessments indicate that all three sites sustained extremely severe damage and destruction.
So who knew ahead of time? Some members of Congress say they were told about the attack just before it happened. The White House says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was also told, but CBS's Charlie Daggett reports that U.S. military personnel in the Middle East were not.
Nobody in that region was given notice of the operation until it was over. There had already been enhanced security measures in place.
CBS's Holly Williams is in Erbil, Iraq, with Iran's reaction.
Iran's foreign minister said this morning that the U.S. had committed a grave violation of international law and that Iran has to respond. Now, that suggests that the Iranian regime feels compelled to retaliate against the U.S., perhaps because to do otherwise would be seen as a humiliation. But even before these U.S. airstrikes, Iran had already accused the U.S. of being complicit in Israel's attacks and had threatened to retaliate against U.S. military bases.
The backlash over the attack has been swift in this country. Democrat Bernie Sanders learned about it while speaking last night in Tulsa.
The only entity that can take this country to war is the U.S. Congress. The president does not have the right.
But it's not just Democrats like Sanders. At least one Republican, Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massey, calls Trump's action unconstitutional. Now, the misery index is high for a big part of the country. Heat warnings up and high temps stretching from the Midwest to the East Coast. Minneapolis is expecting an unusual high of 96. Charlotte, North Carolina, almost that hot. National Weather Service meteorologist Mark Chouinard says the numbers could be historic.
It does look like we'll at least have a lot of daily records. So both daily record high temperatures, but also warm low temperatures. So the temperatures are not going to cool that much at night.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. Efforts to make communities across Wisconsin more livable will soon be underway in 8 communities across the state. Past initiatives of the AARP Wisconsin's Community Challenge Funds have helped to change citywide policies. For more, here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
11 grantees collectively received more than $100,000 in funds to implement quick action projects this year through AARP Wisconsin's Community Challenge. Jennifer Stefani with Creative Downtown Appleton Incorporated is a past recipient and used the funds to install a seasonal parklet or mobile patio in an area that lacked these amenities. She says the aluminum parklet is handicap accessible, includes 3 tables and 6 chairs with planters and herbs for public use.
So it's rosemary and basil, and we have some kale in there. We take care of watering it throughout the summer, and residents can just come down and pick the fresh herbs.
Stefani worked with the city of Appleton to develop a citywide policy for parklets. She says the grant funds were instrumental given the funding constraints that organizations like hers face. Darren Wasniewski with AARP Wisconsin notes the funds are designed to improve quality and accessibility for residents of all ages and abilities. He says these projects often spark community interest in similar initiatives to meet local needs.
Not all of our grantees need to go on and change city policy, but it's always great when they can be used as that catalyst to have these public discussions about, is there something that we can change to make the community livable for all?
Some of this year's AARP-funded projects include handicap accessibility improvements, home repairs for seniors, digital access and literacy expansion, and housing alternatives. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shally Pittman.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Extreme heat warning in effect for your Sunday. Sunshine, highs in the mid-90s. The heat index near 105. Gusty south winds drawing in that humidity. They'll gust up around 30 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear skies, lows in the upper 70s. Storms Monday. It's 87 at our studios.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend news headlines and also State Senator Kelda Royce. Will the Joint Finance Committee actually meet this week? She'll tell us. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are brought to you by Everlight Solar, and here's this week's episode. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Cripescast. This week, my guest is Ryland Tews. He is an actor. He is a writer. He is the star of Hundreds of Beavers, which you're not familiar. It's a film made right here in Wisconsin. It's super, super funny. It's got 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like one of the highest rated films on Rotten Tomatoes. It's won countless awards. It's been at so many festivals. It is the second highest rated film on Letterboxd this year. And it's just a real joy of a movie. I mean, it's great. It's so much fun. I don't think it's technically a silent film, but it does have that vibe. And it's kind of like watching like Looney Tunes had a love child with Charlie Chaplin while the Three Stooges cucked. I don't know. Is that a weird thing? Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing to say. But it's really fun. It's really fun is what I'm trying to say. And it's great to have Ryland on. It's great talking about the local film scene here in Wisconsin, sort of what's possible when you have an idea, how to take it to the next level. So anyway, I'm very excited for this interview. I enjoyed talking to Ryland a lot, and I think you will enjoy it too. And also, I want to say that Hundreds of Beavers, it is right now, you can see it in theaters in Wisconsin for one night only, December 5th. Go to hundredsofbeavers.com for tickets. And it's going to be in Milwaukee, Madison, Watertown, and La Crosse. And you can follow Hundreds of Beavers at Beaver Film on X, and everywhere else it's at Hundreds of Beavers. And also, folks, I should say, I am on tour. I am going to be in Elkhart, Indiana, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Cincinnati, Ohio. That's coming up in the next couple months also. We've got Royal Oak, Michigan coming up, a whole deal. So check it out, charliebarons.com for tickets or cripescast.com. Just click on the tour section. Before we get to the podcast, as always, we are still raising money for Doctors Without Borders. They are helping out tremendously in the Middle East and around the world. And you can follow them at Doctors Without Borders or go to doctorswithoutborders.org. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here is my conversation with Ryland Tews. So your dad made that thing, huh?
Yeah, he made this. He made some other props in the movie too, and he made like the whole merchant stand and the whole like corral thing. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. He's definitely a handyman. So he's definitely someone who I could just at a moment's notice be like, Dad, we need a thing built. You know, like we need a giant apple built. You know, and he'd say, I don't. What, you want it made out of wood? Yeah, we need it for like 2 days. You know. And same thing with this, you know, and he made it happen. So
yeah. What is your dad's scrap wood pile look like?
You know, his wood pile is so big that my mom and him moved into our house growing up like 30 years ago. And there's wood at the bottom of the scrap pile that's never been used. Like, it's been there since day one of like October 1995.
Yeah. Yeah, I got some scrap wood that came with my place, and it's been moved, and I've looked at it, but that's about it. It's way more badass if you've just never touched it or tried to reorganize the scrap wood pile.
Yeah, absolutely. You just let it rot.
Let it roll, baby. And then you look at some of it, and you're like, should I sand that down, or is that lead paint? Nah, that's lead paint. Ah. But how bad would it really be? You know, I went to the hardware store the other week, actually, and I was like, hey, so I'm trying to get rid of some lead paint in a safe way. What do you guys have for that? And they're like, yeah, we don't recommend you do that at all, sir. And I was like, there's nothing? You're not going to give me anything? I guess not. You got to take it to a place now.
Yeah, people are too touchy about it. It's the same thing with asbestos. You know, people go crazy about asbestos. So, you know, that puts hair on your chest. All
yeah,
right?
A little bit won't kill you. You know? By the way, I got to put a disclaimer on this podcast right away. I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to lead paint or asbestos. So don't take my word for it. Just got to cover both of our asses legally. So there you go.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't listen to the guy with two tankards on his head.
Where are you at right now?
I'm in São Paulo, Brazil.
Whoa. The hell are you doing down there?
Well, my girlfriend actually lives down here. So now I split time between Milwaukee and São Paulo.
Really? That's cool, man. Where'd you meet her?
At a film festival, actually. Fantasia Film Festival in Montreal.
Nice. Like
two summers ago. So, yeah, she had there. And I had a film there, and we hit it off. So...
That's great, dude. By the way, congrats on the film. Oh my God, it's so funny and it's so unique. And so you gotta, where did the idea come from?
Well, as all great ideas start, it started in a bar.
And, perfect.
The director, Mike Cheslick, and I, it was actually after the Milwaukee Film Festival in 2018, after we premiered our first feature, Lake Michigan Monster. And we just
also
started
very funny. Are also very great, great, great film. I mean, you guys are so creative with using the resources that you have to make a stylistically cool ass film. Super inventive that you guys are zagging when other people are zigging. You're doing the thing. It's very cool to see.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we just try to like kind of just do whatever we can to kind of stand out from the crowd, even if that, you know, results in your movie looking like crap, which our movie does. It's purposely looks like this, you know, lo-fi style, but that kind of sets us apart from everyone else, which, you know, kind of works to our advantage. But I appreciate that about Lake Michigan Monster. Yeah, that was another movie that was like, you know, this movie looks like it cost $20, but that was a $20 well spent. Mike and I got this idea for Beavers. We just wanted to make this movie kind of like our childhood, like growing up in the wintertime in Wisconsin, like going sledding and doing snowball fights with friends. And we wanted to incorporate mascots because everyone around the world, it is a universal language that people in mascot costumes falling down is inherently funny. That's
true. That's not disputed. There's nobody in this age when you can believe anything. Nobody will dispute that.
Exactly. So we just wanted to incorporate mascots falling down with me getting hurt and sled chases, snowball fights. And it was going to be like a, you know, another smaller like movie like Lake Michigan Monster. But as we continued to write and brainstorm, it just grew and grew and grew into this giant action adventure monstrosity you see today.
Yeah. How do you write? Because for people who haven't seen it, thinking of something to compare it to, it's almost like watching cartoons as a kid, sort of that's kind of a way to maybe describe it, because it's largely is it technically a silent film? Because it's not, there's obviously soundtrack and there's some screams and some guttural stuff. But so I don't know where does it fit in the genre of film for people who aren't, I'm not like a film buff, but how would you put it into a genre if you would?
Yeah, we always just kind of describe it as a no dialogue movie.
No dialogue.
Yeah, because obviously, like you said, I mean, the soundtrack is incredible. And our sound designer, Bob Barrido, this is like his Sistine Chapel of sound design. So the sounds inform so much of the movie and are amazingly well done. But yeah, there's like barely any dialogue. So yeah, we just call it a no dialogue movie. And that was a challenge, you know, how do you got to show versus tell. You know, it's called a movie. It's not called a talkie. You know?
Yeah. And you do that. The acting that is done in there is incredible because it's such physical comedy that I, you know, it's the kind of thing that I think your average viewer will look at and maybe not see how hard it is to really make those even the small choices. Like I remember at one point you guys had that log that, like, I think it was when you were making the fire, you know, and you can't find anything. So you find a log and then you wring out the log, you know, like, so, but getting that prop in particular, a giant log that you can, that's like a sponge. Like, where are you even getting these? Did your dad do that one too?
You know, my dad made a lot of props, but he didn't make that one. And let me tell you, Charlie, it's amazing. If you go on this little place called eBay or Amazon or Etsy, you can find all sorts of crap. And I assure you that lots of the things that we bought for Beavers, I can't possibly imagine anyone else buying. Like you said, there was this like a log pillow that we used for a gag. And yeah, I just typed it on like eBay. Log pillow. And someone makes it, you know, same thing with Etsy. Like, oh, we need little wooden fish, you know, or whatever. Oh, someone makes them. For some reason, someone makes artisanal wooden little fish. So it was like a lot of that kind of stuff. And if we couldn't find it, we would just get my dad to chip in, or I would get my buddy Eric West or my buddy Maurice Gross and throw him some beer. And next thing you know, they make a semi decent looking prop.
Can I also just say that it's not lost on me that prop on your head, you at one point chose to put in a suitcase and fly internationally. That is what stayed in. Did you check a bag especially for that?
Yeah, not only the hat, but we got a couple costumes too.
You got that down there. That is awesome.
Yeah, so, we got the horse down here. We got the dog down here. We got this hat down here. Because, you know, we're actually having our São Paulo premiere next month, too.
Okay, so. That makes more sense. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, no, I don't just carry these things with me without intention of having a screening.
I mean, look, I was not convinced of that until you just said that. I gotta tell you this much, shipping that, how do you even get that? How do you even move that? Box? Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is I had to do a separate suitcase for the hat and the dog and the horse.
Those fit in a suitcase?
They all fit in one suitcase. Yeah. We've gotten pretty good at,
consolidating.
Consolidating. Yeah. Because, you know, whenever we would do screenings around the world, we would try to get as many Beaver Boys to these screenings. And when we would do the in-person screenings, we'd always try to have mascots there. And it was sort of like bringing the circus to town a little bit, where not only you had the screenings, but there'd be some antics that would happen, like during the Q&A, where the director, Mike Cheslick, and I would be doing the Q&A, and then all of a sudden, in the back of the theater, there's a couple of beavers, and then I'd have to go and wrestle them WWE style, you know. So we kind of wanted to, like I said, sort of like bring the circus to town, and it got to a point where people almost started looking forward more to what our antics were going to be at these screenings than the actual movie itself. Anything to try to promote the movie.
Yeah, seriously. So let's talk about the writing of this, because I mean, I'm writing is sort of my main thing, or has always been my main thing. But in watching this film, so much of the writing is in obviously the visual storytelling, but that still has to be written, and written very specifically, because you guys have callbacks and themes and all that sort of stuff. So how do you go about writing this?
I mean, honestly, it's a little bit of a blur, but yeah, it was just, again, the director, Mike Chesnick, and I, over the course of several months, just coming up with all these different gag ideas and how these gags can build on top of one another in satisfying ways, and how you can make a kind of a one-off gag or a one-off runner come back in a satisfying way later. So it was just a big puzzle of just how are we going to arrange this in such a way that it's going to make sense and be satisfying, and there won't be any loose ends. And, you know, you come up with 1,000 gags and you go with like the best, like, I don't know, 100 or less or whatever. And again, you just try to connect them all in a satisfying way. And we just drew on little note cards, on little index cards, and placed them on a kitchen table. And then we would just kind of rearrange all these index cards and in such a way that they would all connect to one another. And then at 5 o'clock, we'd break and we'd, you know, break out the Tangeray and watch Kung Fu for 6 hours. So it's a little bit of a blur as to how we exactly got this done. But all I can say is it took a while.
Okay.
It was a big old puzzle. It was a big 1,000-piece puzzle.
Who were the influences? I mean, you even bring in Kung Fu. What were the movies that influenced this movie?
I think some of the biggest influences, obviously, like silent film, like Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin. But then if you want to go more, you know, recent, you know, the movie is sort of like a half film, half video game. And we kind of wanted to meld those two worlds. And so Mike always credits Super Mario Galaxy 2 as a huge reference.
Okay. All right.
And obviously, just like other role playing games in general, you know, like Legend of Zelda and Skyrim and stuff. But, you know, we were influenced by, like I said, like the action and how the action is staged, like in Jackie Chan movies from the 80s and early 90s and like Evil Dead 2. And just like older cartoons, like older Popeye cartoons. Also, I mean, Mike has a whole Letterboxd like account where it's just all the inspirations for beavers. And there's like 50 movies on there. So, you know, it's a lot of old cinema. It's a lot of video game references. And it's just sort of, again, it's a lot of physical comedy, which I think Hollywood hasn't done in many, many years for no particular reason. I just think people kind of have forgotten how to do it. But there's always room for physical comedy. There always has been. And people always love those old silent films. And they say, oh, you know, those old silent films are so great. You know, it's really a shame they can't make movies like that anymore. And it's like, no, you can. You're just not, you know. And yeah. So we challenge ourselves to like, well, let's give it a whirl, you know. So,
yeah. Well, props to you guys on that. And it's went really well. I mean, I want to get to the shooting of it in a second, but how many awards you guys racked up, a bunch of like awards, and film. Can you just rattle off some of those for people who don't know? It was in like a bunch of different festivals. Obviously, yeah. You got this going on here. I mean, it was very well received, and just so unique. So I think like you really demonstrated that the audience can exist for this kind of comedy.
Oh, totally. And we weren't exactly sure how people were going to take it. And it did take a while for, sorry, the cat knockdowns and stuff.
Cats will do that, man.
Cats will do that. You know, I just, he's drunk. Yeah. but it took a little bit of convincing people at first to go see this movie. Because again, it's a black and white movie. There's no dialogue. It's like an hour and 45 minutes. There's no stars in it, you know. So it took a little bit of convincing. But once film festivals started to take it, then it exploded. I mean, April 2023, I think we were in, just in April alone, we were in like 18 film festivals. So we were like trying to like split up and get Beaver Boys everywhere, you know. So the movie's played at like over 70 film festivals worldwide in, you know, the 2 years or so that it's been on the festival circuit. It's got a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. It has a 4.2 on Letterboxd, which is the second highest rated movie of this year behind Dune.
Wow, dude. That, yeah. I mean, that is, you have the ear of the, or the eye of the, you know, the film rating elite right there, which is, that's incredible.
And as far as awards, it's hard to keep track. We've gotten like dozens of awards and we've had such a blast going to all these different festivals, like around America and then like overseas too. Like I said, like, it doesn't matter what your background is. It's just like, people like physical comedy. I don't know. People like seeing me get hurt and fall down, and they like to see beavers getting torn apart.
Well, you're really good at it. I got to say that. And the other thing is, it's so smart because there's no language barrier in it. So the international audience, I mean, it's the definition of universal in that way. What are the economics like of it? Like, you know, you watch this film, super well received, critically well received. Is it something that we could see more of? Like, because I think it being well received is one thing, and then it, you know, you guys getting the financial return and the investment on the next one, or the next one, like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're going forward with the next one, and
that's great.
We're already starting to finance the next one, which is awesome. Because Beavers was such a small budget, we already have been able to make our investors money back and then some. And again, that, you know, the movie released to theaters in technically it released at the end of last January. So it's been in theaters now for months and months and months. It's made all its money back already. You know, the next movie will be a little bit bigger budget because, you know, the nice thing about Beavers was it was made at such a time in everyone's life where we could kind of afford to do things really cheap, and people could, and we sort of were cashing in a lot of favors and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But moving forward to the next movie, it's a bigger movie. But we still want to just kind of go from, you know, the next step up, where it's like, you know, it's like Lake Michigan Monster. What's the next logical step up? Okay, hundreds of beavers. And the next logical step up is movie number 3. We don't want to go from hundreds of beavers to, you know, a Marvel movie.
Right.
We just want to scale up accordingly. And like I said, that's already in the works right now. And because that was always a big thing for the director, Mike Cheslick, and I was, and our producing partners, SRH, was, you know, we wanted to make sure to make the investors money, because we like to think of these movies as like a small business. And I think that so many times in indie film, you get these people who they get their budget to make their movie, but they're only really interested in like making the movie and then, okay, now it's out on streaming or whatever. And we wanted to create like, hey, let's bring people back to theaters because this is the way the movie's supposed to be shown and experienced at theaters. And on top of that, if you do it in theaters first and you kind of self-distribute the movie yourself, you can end up making a lot more money. So we are very conscious of like, hey, let's make our investors money back and then they'll come back for the next movie. So,
right. Yeah, it's way more sustainable that way.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Special Report. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth characterizes the results from last night's attack on Iran this way.
Iran's nuclear ambitions have been obliterated.
Joint Chiefs Chair Dan Kane says B-2 bombers and other weaponry caught the Iranian military by surprise.
Iran's fighters did not fly, and it appears that Iran's surface-to-air missile systems did not see us. Throughout the mission, we retained the element of surprise.
Trump administration officials have said this attack was strictly about Iran's nukes, not anything else. CBS News military analyst and retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland.
Regime change was not a goal. This was a limited, not an open-ended operation that the United States was not interested in this going any farther, and that we were focused very narrowly on the destruction of the Iranian nuclear facilities.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Peter King.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Connington to stay in Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA Bucks guard Pat Connington has picked up his player option, meaning he chooses to play out the final year of his contract with the Bucks rather than become a free agent. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel says the 32-year-old will be back for his seventh season with the Bucks, making just over $9 million. NFL, now that Jair Alexander is with the Baltimore Ravens, would the Packers bring back defensive back Rasul Douglas? The 30-year-old telling a fan on Twitter he doubts it. The Packers traded Douglas to the Bills back in 2023. Baseball, the Brewers wrapping up their series today in Minnesota against the Twins. Tomorrow night, they're back home against the Pirates. The Crew won 17-6 Friday night and again 9-0 yesterday with 30 hits and no home runs. Pat Murphy on the Brewers batters chipping away at the plate.
Yeah, I love it. We're being little woodpeckers and probably should get in the weight room. Yeah, I like homers. Yeah, I like homers a lot, so let's make no mistake about it.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Extreme heat warning in effect for your Sunday. Sunshine, highs in the mid-90s. The heat index near 105. Gusty south winds drawing in that humidity. They'll gust up around 30 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear skies. Lows of the upper 70s. Storms Monday. It's 87 at our studios.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Ooma.
What was that?
That is Business Phone Bliss with the Ooma Cloud Phone System. It handles all our voice, video, and messaging needs.
You sound very
calm. I am. Ooma has everything I need to run my business more efficiently, like virtual receptionist, call routing, and video conferencing. And it starts at just $19.95 per month per user, plus taxes and fees.
Ooma.
Nice. Find your business calm at ooma.com/radio.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age,
He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, I'm Charlie Behrens. This is the Cripes Cast, and here's my conversation with Wisconsin filmmaker Ryland Tews. What I think is cool is that you guys, you know, you did it all, and you did it with the props. Even you brought up your dad made them, and you shot it. You shot in northern Wisconsin, the UP, right? Or where exactly did you shoot it?
Yep, northern Wisconsin, UP. We stayed the first winter. We stayed in Stevenson, Michigan. But we were shooting all over the UP and northern Wisconsin. And then the second winter, we stayed in Manitowish Waters. In Wisconsin. And again, we were just shooting all, I mean, you name it, we were shooting something somewhere up there, you know. And of course, you know, once in a while, someone would stop us and we'd be wearing, you know, beaver costumes, and they'd think we'd be making some sort of weird furry sex video, which I assure you, we were not. But it was definitely a strange thing to stumble upon.
I hope you guys steered clear of any public hunting land, by the way, because, you know, or do you have to have orange hats on? How did you protect your beavers? Because there's a lot of hunters that might listen first, shoot second. You know what I mean? Or shoot first, second.
Oh yeah, no, we definitely thought about that, but we were we never saw any hunters, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that would have been a good story if someone got shot, but unfortunately, yeah. No one shot on set.
Yeah. Next time you should really do that for the press. I mean, if you want, you know, think about all the more money you could have made if you had. I'm not talking a lethal shot. I'm talking just a flesh wound, like a little calf nick, you know?
I mean, just think if like I got shot in the ass or something, like that's just comedy right there.
Right.
You
know? Right. Yeah. We're not trying to recreate the rust situation or anything.
Yeah. No, I'd get shot in the ass and I'd think at first, yeah, it's really painful. But I think about 30 seconds later, I think, this is pretty funny. This is good.
Nothing beats a shot in the ass. As far as physical comedy goes, that's kind of best, you know?
Yeah, we'll save that gimmick for the sequel, 200s of Beats.
Did you just tell me what the third movie is?
No, I did not.
No. That'd be a shame. That is a shame, because that would be great, is what I was trying to say.
Maybe one day. I mean, it's not the first one in the pipeline, but you never know. You never know.
What did you shoot it on?
Oh my God, it was like a Panasonic GH5. I think that's what it was.
GH5. What even is that?
It's just like a consumer, like it's a nice camera for what we needed, like, but it's not like a shooting on Alexa.
Yeah. Just one of those standard DSLR deals. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's But that's the thing, is like, we didn't need to even the movie's not even shot in 4K or even 2K. The movie shot in 1080, because even if we were to have shot it in 4K with like a nice Alexa, which would have been a waste of money, we would have just degraded the movie anyways, because that's the look of the movie. We have to make the movie look grainy and scratchy in order to do all these effect shots, you know, because the movie doesn't look like, it's not Avatar, you know?
Right.
It's like, what's the point of shooting on at a super expensive camera if you're going to degrade the quality anyway? So we got the GH5. I don't know how much it cost. It was like $1,000. It's probably less now, but that's all we needed.
That's and because also in editing it, if you're editing 4K, that's just going to bog down the edit of it all too.
Yes. Yes. And Mike would have the, he actually had his Mac in the cabin we were staying at. So every day after shooting, he would bring the footage into the edit immediately and show us like, see,
yeah,
that's why we shot that thing today. And we'd go, okay, I guess we'll stick around for another day.
How long did it take to shoot it?
It took, I think it was 13 weeks.
Wow.
And it was over two winters. It was winter 2020 and winter 2021. And then we had some other shoots here and there throughout the course of the year. But I'd say in total about 13 weeks.
Wow, dude. I mean, you know, in my world, it's like you shoot something, you put it up like the next week or whatever, and you get that, maybe that dopamine hit because it did well, or you get that sort of rejection if it didn't do well, and then you kind of change from there. So that's kind of the world that I'm in, and I feel like a lot of people making content at all are in. But for you guys to invest that much time in such a unique vision, I mean, that's got to be half the battle right there, is staying with something and believing in it for so long, because it's just not that, that's not what I guess, that's the movie business for sure, but so much of the entertainment business is going away from movies, and it's just really cool to like see what something with that much thought and that much execution can, what can happen. I mean, what you guys create is a, it's a masterpiece. It's really, really great.
Well, thank you. That's very, very kind of you to say, and I appreciate that. And like you said, that's what it was. It was just like, we had to, you know, the director, Mike Cheslick, he said early on, he said, look guys, we either make this movie or we die. There's no third option. So we have to make the movie or we will die. So even though the movie took a very long time, you know, we started shooting in the beginning of January 2020, and the movie wasn't actually finished until September 2022. It was all worth it because we knew, because we were allotted a bunch of time, we were able to make the exact movie we wanted to. There's a lot of indie films these days who, you know, they say, oh, we shot our whole feature in 21 days. And it's like, ah, okay. Well, that's great. That's a great turnaround. I'm happy for your turnaround and that like you, oh, wow, boom, you made a movie. But like, because our movie took so long, we were able to just get it absolutely correct and jam as much stuff into it as possible and make exactly the kind of movie we wanted to. So I guess at the end of the day, even though the movie took a super long time to make and we had to do so many different shoots and go up north twice, you know, two winters, it was all worth it because at the, you know, now the rest of our lives, we can look back and say, you know, we didn't compromise. We made the exact movie we wanted to, and it turned out to be the right move.
And was it always a plan to shoot it over two winters?
No. I mean, originally we were like, oh yeah, we can shoot this all like in one winter. And it just became apparent so quick that that was just not going to happen. First of all, we only had a little bit of money the first winter. And it wasn't after we showed some other future investors, like what we'd already shot, that then they came aboard. But no, the thing is, we had such a small crew of guys. I mean, sometimes it'd be like two to like four or five guys, and everything moves so much slower when you're in the deep snow, in the cold in northern Wisconsin,
yeah.
You know, digging all that equipment and all the props and all the costumes into like the woods, and you're cold and you're stepping and it's like you're getting buried in snow. It's just, it's so much manual labor that by the time you actually start to shoot, you've already like wasted so much time, and then, oh, all of a sudden the sun's going down because it's 4 p.m.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You have way less day from a practicality standpoint. This is It's a difficult task. Did you have money to pay people like right away, or was it like deferred payment? Like, kind of geeking out on the nuts and bolts in this, but I think it's cool to like dive into that for other people out there who are inspired by your film, want to make their film. Like, how do you do that practically?
I mean, we paid guys as much as we could. I'll say that, you know, and, again, no one was getting rich shooting this movie, you know.
Right.
We're not rich now either, but
yeah.
It's not like, again, there was no stars in this movie or anything, but you know, we paid what we could. Again, it was a small budget movie. But a lot of it was done out of the kindness of people's hearts because they just thought it was a lot of fun to shoot the movie. I mean, like, you know, I would go through my phone and I would think to myself, like, okay, who am I going to get to come up for a few days or a week to help us out, shoot this movie? And you just start thinking, okay, like, this is a good dude. This is a good dude. This is a good dude. And you say, hey, you want to come up for a weekend? You want to come up for a week and just like play a beaver in our, you know, stupid mascot movie. And they just be like, oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. How can I help? You know? Because it's not every day you get a phone call saying, hey, we need you to come play a mascot, yeah, you know, a feature film, and you know, you're gonna be one of the stars of the movie. And hey, we got a fridge full of beer for you too. You know, yeah, every day it's always a hard out. You know, when you can only film to like 4 or 4:30 every day, everyone's gonna get home to the cabin. We're gonna drink 30 beers or whatever. Right. Right. And we're gonna get up early, we're gonna do it all over again. And so there was never any sort of like interpersonal conflicts or anything. It was just a bunch of dudes in the woods making a furry video.
Yeah. That's perfect. So it was a good time. Do you guys have like when you finally got the cut ready and everything, did you have sort of a feeling then that it was going to take off in the way it did? Or
yeah, I mean, I was always very confident in the movie, I will say. I always thought we had something pretty special on our hands. But again, it went through a lot of, it's just, you know, Mike, he edited the whole movie and he did all the VFX work on the movie as well. So he was constantly doing like new cuts of scenes and final cuts of the movie and stuff like that. But by the time it was all in place, I just had this feeling like it was going to really resonate with people. And again, it took a while because no dialogue, black and white. It's an hour and 45 minutes. There's no stars. You know, it's a little hard to convince people, like film festivals and stuff, like, hey, your audience is going to like this. And then once the reviews started coming in and other festivals were like, hey, you know, I hear this movie's pretty good. And oh, these guys are going to show up with a big raccoon hat and they're going to wrestle beavers, you know, then it was sort of an all encompassing like event. And then we really knew like we had something kind of special here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, that is super fun. So what's your story? Where did you grow up and what got you into film?
Well, I grew up in Milwaukee and I've just been kind of, you know, I don't know, making home movies and stuff from a young age. Whenever there was a class project in elementary school or high school, I always asked the teacher, hey, can I make a video? You know? Yeah. And so the videos were never very related to the, you know, the
assignment.
They were just impressed that, oh, they made a little movie. I guess I'll give them a good grade, you know? Yeah. But yeah, just from a young age doing that. And then Mike Cheslick and I met in high school. And then our first video together was a promotional video for the high school, for Whitefish Bay High School. Just called the Whitefish Bay High School promo. You can look it up on YouTube. That was our first one. And then we did a history video also for Whitefish Bay High School. And people seemed to really like our videos. They thought they were very fun and funny and silly. And they said, good job, guys. Here's a check for $100. And then we said, hey, we should just, you know, keep working together. I guess people seem to think we're decently talented. So even though Mike went off to NYU out east and I went to UW-Milwaukee for film school, we continued to work together, and I would like fly out to New York and we'd work on stuff together. And then eventually we made this web series together called LIPS, which is an acronym for League of Interplanetary Process Servers. And at first we thought that was going to take off, but nothing came of it. And so I just started making Lake Michigan Monster back in Milwaukee. I started sending Mike footage. He started editing it. And next thing you know, Lake Michigan Monster is sort of a little cult hit. And then we were able to get a little bit more money for beavers. And that's where we are today.
That's cool. So did you like sort of growing up, did you like the path for movies? There used to be like this path to do movies. And now with sort of COVID and sort of people going to movies or not going to movies or watching them at home or whatever, the whole industry is completely changing, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, is this sort of the path to do it in your mind, if just making your own stuff as opposed to, you know, the traditional go to LA, work as a bartender, work as a server, audition, that kind of thing? Did you ever in your mind think about going that route, or have you always been doing sort of what you want to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, like I, you know, Mike lives out in LA and has for several years. I mean, I lived in LA for a few years when we were finishing Lake Michigan Monster. And I just worked at like a ramen shop, which, by the way, my love interest in beavers, the furrier, we worked at the same ramen shop together.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we were just like friends, and like then eventually I'd tell her we were making this beaver movie, and I said, hey, do you want to like be this character? And she said, sure. So
that's awesome. Yeah, she's got a following outside of the thing too, doesn't she? She's got a YouTube following and whatever, doesn't
yeah,
she?
She's got a huge following. She has like 500,000 subscribers. Yeah, everyone should check out Olivia Graves at The Witch of Wonderlust on YouTube. And I don't know, I just thought, oh, she'd be great for this part. So boom, there you go. And she didn't even have any like acting experience, but she does a great job.
Oh, she did awesome. Yeah. So you did that traditional thing then. You went out there and like
But like we did Lake Michigan Monster, and then I kind of was, well, we finished Lake Michigan Monster once I got out to LA. And then we were like trying to like sell Lake Michigan Monster and stuff. And, but like, honestly, usually when you go to LA, then you're like, oh, you're like trying to do all these like tryouts and stuff and audition for all these different parts. I didn't do that because I was so focused on me and Mike's next movie. And it's one of those things where it's like, I much rather spend all my time and energy like in our next movie rather than splitting time trying to like do other projects, because I knew Beavers was going to be such a gigantic undertaking that it had to require all my, you know, focus and energy. So it was a little, I mean, obviously it helped to move out there so Mike and I could work closer together. I mean, if we're working partners, we should probably live in the same city, you know? So that made sense, but I didn't do one tryout or audition for any other movie in LA because I was just too focused on finishing Lake Michigan Monster and then just going right into Beavers, you know?
Yeah.
And then eventually once COVID happened, that was kind of the final straw where it's like, what the hell am I doing in LA?
Right. You
know? So I went back to Milwaukee. Mike stayed in LA, but then, yeah, we raised some money and we decided to make Beavers up in northern Wisconsin because we had connections in Wisconsin and we knew people around Wisconsin and Minnesota and stuff. So it was kind of funny for Mike then, because he was like the LA guy in Hollywood. And he's like, now I have to come back to Wisconsin in the northern woods and make this movie, you know? So nothing about it's very traditional, but I would say that if you want to make your own indie movie, you should, because, you know, you get to make exactly what you want, but just don't try to make it a Hollywood movie, because you're probably not going to have very much money. So don't try to make a Hollywood movie, try to make something completely different. And that's what we did with both of our movies. You know, we couldn't get some like great 4K color image, so we made it look like this grainy black and white, you know, it just looks like crap, you know, but that allowed us to do like 1500 effect shots and beavers or whatever. And then on top of that, you just got to set aside money for marketing, because the nice thing about Beavers was we got in cahoots with SRH in Milwaukee, this ad agency there. And after Beavers was finished, because it was an SRH co-production, they kind of footed the bill on all the marketing, and they really did, you know, all the marketing on like on the Instagram accounts and the Facebook and X and stuff. And they did all these amazing Beavers posts, like a few every week. And people loved them, like doing all like the Beavers, like movie parody posts and stuff like that. So I would say, even though you should make your own indie movie, make sure you set aside money or become friends with a marketing agency.
Yeah. Even better.
Especially because everyone's on their phone these days, you know, just staring at Instagram or whatever. And it's like, you got to get on there. You know, you got to do some sort of viral marketing of some sort. So.
And then what is the importance to you of film versus whatever we're doing on social media these days? Like, what does that mean to you? And why do you think that's important and worth hanging on to as people gravitate more towards smaller screen?
I just think that there's such a power in cinema that is unmatched by any other medium. Obviously there are some terrific television shows too, but like, there's something when you're like sitting in a theater full of people. That's why I'm a big advocate of theaters too. When you're sitting in a theater full of people, seeing a great movie, and you have this like collective experience seeing something for the first time, it's just a very powerful thing. And it's something that took a long time to make too. So hopefully you're kind of guaranteed to have a worthwhile experience too. I think that's kind of the main thing for me is seeing something that you've created and put all your blood, sweat, and tears in over a long time, and seeing it projected on the big screen, and seeing just all the joy it brings people. Is really quite powerful, and there's nothing quite like it.
That's great, man. Yeah, I would agree with that. We've got a segment on this podcast called What Makes You Say Cripes. So I don't think I got to explain the meaning of cripes to you. So what makes you say cripes?
It's got to be warm beer.
warm beer is the worst. You know, I'll say this, though. There are some places in Germany where they serve it warm intentionally. Can you believe that?
That's what they keep telling me. But, like, I've had plenty of warm beer in my day. I've had plenty of hot beer that's been sitting in the sand at a beach before. And it is... I don't understand. Like, I understand, like, they drink warm beer. Like, you know, I understand in like England, it rains a lot. It's very overcast. But like, even if I'm sitting by a fire and I'm cold, still give me an ice cold beer. Like, we were out shooting hundreds of beavers. You know, it's below zero. And then we get home and we have like ice cold Bush Light, you know. Right. I can't stand a warm beer.
Well, that's all the time we have for now. If you want to listen to my full conversation with Ryland, check out the Cripescast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on air.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, State Representative Francesca Hong on Republicans playing games with the state budget.
plus Kristen Lierley, John and Gordy, and much more.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a Neverclear glass treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. The day after the U.S. attack on Iran's nuclear sites, the State Department has ordered family members and non-essential embassy personnel out of Lebanon over concerns about possible retaliation. The embassy remains open. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says the attack obliterated Iran's nuclear sites.
We devastated the Iranian nuclear program, but it's worth noting the operation did not target Iranian troops or the Iranian people.
Joint Chiefs Chair Dan Kane calls the attack historic.
This was the largest B-2 operational strike in U.S. history and the second longest B-2 mission ever flown, exceeded only by those in the days following 9/11.
Kane says the attack caught Iran by surprise with no military response. Retired Marine General Frank McKenzie.
Iran is weakened. Iran is probably the weakest they've been since I began studying.